You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
I want this movie dead. I want Josh Trank dead. I want his career burnt to the ground. I so just want to be on the review just to make that Untouchables reference.
You gotta love the Untouchables.
Dude, the Untouchables is great, even though it's wildly inaccurate to the actual history. It's like, yeah, it's still a fun movie to watch.
Yeah. How many historical movies are actually true to the history? Be honest.
Well,
fewer nowadays. It feels like people just get a license and say, hey, these movies got by making up a bunch of facts. We can too.
On the subject of Kevin Costner movies, I hear 13 Days is more or less accurate. Not to be that guy, but I am that guy.
Stop being that guy.
Yeah, I mean, like, the guy who does, like, the best historically accurate stuff would probably be either Martin Scorsese or Paul Greengrass in terms of certain events kind of thing, where it's like, yeah, they meticulously research the history behind their stories kind of thing.
Except for the fact that Joe Pesci is supposed to be 18 in Goodfellas.
Well, that's a thing of he just wanted to still cast that actor in the role. which, by the way, that's a slight promo to go look up History Buffs on YouTube, because that's a great channel by a former colleague of ours, Nick Hodges.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's also the segue into saying, yeah, I wonder how much studying Josh Trank did on the actual events surrounding this part of Capone's life, because by the end of it, I don't know what to believe is true about this story.
I think he
well,
did
that's
a lot
the whole
of...
point of the film, it feels like, is that you aren't supposed to know. Because at the end of Capone's life, he was dissolving into a puddle of syphilis, so...
What does a puddle of syphilis look like? Is it brown? Is it green? Is it does it look like Tom Hardy's face?
It's this movie.
I think both Tom Hardy and Josh Trank did a lot of research on how Danny DeVito plays the Penguin in Batman Returns, and you gotta give him credit for it.
That's totally what Tom Hardy's doing, because throughout this entire movie, he just had that.
I'm gonna run this city like a bat from hell.
Yeah, seriously, I'm like, I couldn't understand him half the time. Like, this was one of those cases where I really wish there were subtitles in my screener, because I just couldn't hear half the dialogue he was saying.
Oh, totally.
But it's funny, too, because I just think that I'm like, I think he saw Nick Nolte in pretty much anything he's made in the last 10 years and just did like, okay, I can do something like that.
Or just saw Nick Nolte.
Yeah, just doing an interview with
Nick Nolte. Damn son of a bitch.
But, this is Capone, which originally was supposed to be called Fonzo, and I guess somebody said, nobody knows Al Capone's nickname, why don't we just call it Capone? Everyone knows that name.
That's fair.
And as we've been alluding to, this is the triumphant comeback, question mark, of Josh Trank after the disaster that was Fantastic Four, the reboot.
That movie.
Ooh.
I love the pitch that movie was gonna be David Cronenberg's take on the Fantastic Four, and it's like, who wants that?
I mean, that could have been interesting if the movie actually was that, but
well,
then
it was,
it's just
it
like
was
a
done
big...
well in Venture Brothers when they had the Fantastic Four. Every time they unleash the tank, the humans are just like, you son of a bitch.
Oh, that was a great episode. But yeah, this is, as we mentioned, this is following the final year of Al Capone's life when he's heavily into dementia from the syphilis that he contracted when he was like 15, I guess.
That's what he said, yep.
Yep. And yeah, you watch a very long movie, which isn't that long by itself, but it feels long, of watching Tom Hardy as this dude going through more degenerative states as he's just, his brain is starting to break, he's starting to hallucinate things, people are trying to question him about money that may be buried, and that's about it.
Yep, that's the movie in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Outside of the fact that it's a part of the Harry Potter universe because it's about one of the tellers from Gringotts. Boom!
Well, one of the things I found interesting about it is that it, you know, as you say, it's like it's about him degenerating, but it feels like it's from his point of view. So it's like, you know, Here you have this guy who is Al fucking Capone. He was the massive gangster kingpin. He was king of the world. You know, they got him on tax evasion, not because of anything he actually horrible that he did.
I mean, stuff like him was the reason they invented the RICO cases, because otherwise they could not touch him.
Right. And here he is. It's after his jail sentence, and he is dissolving, literally dissolving. And yet all these, and it's interesting to have, it's like, first of all, it has him trying to see the world through a dissolving mind. But also it has, the more interesting part, was everybody's reaction to him. Because you had the people absolutely still looking at him as though he is Al Capone, when, you know, the gangsta, when he is very clearly not that anymore. And just the dichotomy of, like, the cops being like, where's this money? You know, and it's, and meanwhile, his response to being questioned was to poop his pants. I mean, it's watching, how do you respond to somebody who has a king who has been decrowned?
Yeah, but see, what you say there about the outside perspective being the more interesting part, that's what I think is a big hindrance to this film, is because, I mean, Tom Hardy's in about 95% of all the shots in this movie from his perspective. And the problem with that is that it's mostly all the same things happening to him, just getting worse and worse. And he doesn't really change at all in the story because he can't. It almost feels like it should have been about Linda Cardellini or Matt Dillon or literally anybody else as the central character watching Capone dissolve.
That's fair.
Because
that is fair.
Yeah, because that's the problem, is that because it's so limited in what they could do with the actual character, it feels like Josh Trank used that as an excuse to do crazy arty visuals and crazy dream sequences to compensate for the lack of story. And I'm only going to say this, that one thing that did work about that is that I thought the cinematography was actually pretty good on the whole throughout this movie.
Well, when you get the cinematographer who did Twin Peaks The Return, you're going to get something pretty, you know, for the most part, good looking. I thought at times it wasn't as well shot as I would hope it be. But as far as the whole conceit of tackling a mentally deteriorating Al Capone from his own perspective, that's not a bad idea. That's a pitch I would buy.
Yeah.
But they needed to do more.
Yeah, you either, well, A, they have too much of, they want to have it both ways. They either want to show it from the perspective of all the outsiders looking at him, or show it from his perspective. Now, your best case scenario with a movie from his perspective would be something similar to, like, Once Upon a Time in America. I'm not sure if you guys have seen that movie, but it's shown through, like, almost stream of consciousness, the mind of an aging gangster, may or may not even be just him hallucinating off of opium. So,
and see, that would have made more sense in this movie, because there are, like, it alternates between actually showing real events and then just segueing kind of awkwardly into crazy Lynchian dream sequences out of
nowhere. Yeah, like, I loved them using the radio to explain the Valentine's Day massacre, the St. Valentine's Day massacre. So, yeah, if they wanted to focus more, I mean, I absolutely agree that, you know, they did it through Capone's point of view. They should have gone more with it, and they wanted it from the family's point of view. They should have done more with it, and they have this kind of middle ground where neither side gets enough screen time that it needs. But if they wanted to do more from Al Capone's point of view, absolutely having those more surreal elements, like the radio show, like the boy with the balloon, and, you know, things like that, would have been a
and
lot
that crazy
more
Louis Armstrong musical sequence where I'm like, this is almost interesting, except why is it happening? Is kind of the thing I was just thinking throughout.
You know what it just kept reminding me of at times? The episode of Watchmen that follows Hood of Justice, but not nearly as artistically well done.
It's like a fusion of that with the Dr. Manhattan episode from that season also. But yeah. Like you said, it's like Josh Trank was trying to do that, but I don't know. I can't decide what is it about the movie that doesn't fully work, because he wrote, directed, and edited this movie, and I feel like he should have passed off one of those hats to somebody else, because it felt like, because he was given so much control over the project, no one could tell him no on certain ideas, because honestly, I thought the editing of this movie was pretty bad in a lot of ways. Like,
I mean, that's essentially the goal of this project to him, is just basically, hey, this is my comeback. This is the movie that's going to show I can do it all. I'm Josh Trank. and at the end of the day, really didn't accomplish much.
Yeah, like, it's not even, I'm going to say this, it's not the disaster that Fantastic Four was, because that one was just a movie that was eviscerated to pieces through too many cooks in the kitchen, I feel like, along with whatever else.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not as disjointed as that one is, but by the end of the movie, I kind of just sat there and I went, I'm not sure what I was supposed to learn from this, if anything, honestly.
But again, you know, the thing to take away was the looking at this guy from the lens of a fallen king. But, you know, did it need an entire movie length to say that? If they had focused more on the other characters, yeah, but they didn't, so...
Yeah, because honestly, I wish this movie was from Kyle MacLachlan's perspective, because anytime he showed up in this movie as the Doctor, he nailed it. Like, he came in prepared, and he totally owned the scenes he was in.
Well that's just Kyle MacLachlan.
It would have been interesting, like, it definitely could have been a segue from the Doctor, but it's a syndrome where it's essentially, you are not believed that things are happening to you because people think you're crazy, even though it actually is happening to you. And it's named after the wife of someone in the Nixon administration. But it's like, because one of the things that Capone was freaking out about was that he was being watched, that the cops were on to him, that all this stuff. And that was absolutely true. But nobody was taking him seriously because he was dissolving into a puddle of syphilis. So it would have been so interesting to have that aspect of not being believed because you are literally disappearing, while at the same time being absolutely correct.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. But yeah, again, that's barely discussed throughout a lot of this. Because even that plot line with the people watching him doesn't really go anywhere.
It just kind of
it's just there. Like, I'm not surprised people are watching him, but yeah. But then also, it felt like a lot of other plot lines are going nowhere. Like, there's the whole thing with his possible illegitimate son or whatever. And that part never went anywhere either, except for like one quickie resolution, which just went, and it's done. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Yeah, and then Linda Cardellini is just kind of there to play the same role she played in Green Book, which, you know, I like her as an actress, but it feels like these are the roles that she gets saddled with. It's just the wife in almost everything, because she's the wife in this, she's Hawkeye's wife in Avengers, she's wife in Green Book.
I wish I could watch the movie that you're pitching, Mindy, because that's a really, really fascinating movie that I'm sure we could talk about for a lot longer, but... On the whole, this movie just kind of left me wanting. I did want to bring up one thing and just sort of ask you guys. But how did you guys feel about Tom Hardy in this role? I mean, we talked a lot about the makeup and the voice, but...
I'm incredibly conflicted because on the one hand, he's totally immersed into the role because that's what Tom Hardy does. He just digs deep into characters and does that. The problem I feel is that he did a lot of bizarre choices with his acting, where the voice, the certain mannerisms and tics he was doing that were incredibly distracting, and I just could not get past them to see how immersed the performance was otherwise.
I disagree. I thought that he was really involved with being in this really distorted state. And, you know, trying to be himself through, you know, being Al Capone through this distorted state. But that did mean that he was gross the entirety of the movie in a way that was rather unpleasant. But I don't think that that was a negative in regards to his portrayal. I thought that was appropriate.
I think the only thing that would have helped is that if there was any point where we saw what Al Capone in his prime looked like in those flashback sequences. Because even when he's in those flashbacks, he's still playing crazy, degenerative, Al Capone of the future.
But were they supposed to be flashbacks? That's the thing. Is like,
well, like, I mean, it's interesting when you have lived-in memories, but we have no context as to, you know, other than people telling us what Capone is like, we have no context in terms of Tom Hardy's performance as to what he used to be. And I feel like that would have helped to show one snippet even of that.
I absolutely agree, because you need to show some form of transformation over time. You can't just have him start at Danny DeVito and Batman Returns and end as Danny DeVito and Batman Returns, because there's no... The big issue with this movie is there's no real audience surrogate. There's no place where you can put yourself in where you're like, oh, I understand that character, and I'm watching it through their perspective, even if it's Al Capone for a second before he does something absolutely either ridiculous or barbaric. I gotta side with Justin on this one. I really just, I thought he was hamming it up. I'm overall kind of mixed with Tom Hardy's filmography. In some movies, he is fantastic. I think he was great in Bronson. I think he, I mean, despite his lovely, lovely singing voice, he's all right as Bane.
See, like, that's one I wasn't as crazy about, but, like, Warrior was great. He was great in The Revenant, you know?
With Venom, I felt like he was both the best and worst thing about that movie at the same time. And
oh, I thought he was, like, he was the glue holding that movie together.
See, that's how I feel about this movie, too. It's a weird thing that, like, the only thing that really pushes me from scene to scene is Tom Hardy's performance, yet I also think he's not giving a great performance at the same time. It is literally just a perfect balance of being both hammy and being entirely, like ham-fisted and, like, super watchable.
Yeah, and throughout this whole movie, I just kept thinking, too, one day we'll remember that Matt Dillon was a great actor at one point, because that poor guy, like, I remember back in 2005 when everyone's like, oh, wow, you know, whatever you think of Crash, Matt Dillon was awesome in that movie, and he was really, really good, and it feels like we've never seen Matt Dillon at that peak since, and even here, he is trying so hard to stand out in this movie, and he's just given so little to work with in this.
Yeah, Matt Dillon and Mickey Rourke are in that weird spot where it's like, oh, you gave one of the best performances of your career, and now nothing.
Yeah.
I feel bad I saw Matt Dillon and I thought it was Matt Damon, so I was looking for Matt Damon the entirety of the movie.
Well, Matt Damon's in every movie, Mindy, if you don't understand
oh,
that.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
He actually played the jacket in Deerskin.
Knew it.
You didn't see that, but that's another screener we got.
I mean, with as old as Matt Damon's getting lately, I thought, I was like, oh, that leathery complexion, that did look familiar. But anyway, no, yeah, I mean, okay, winding down to final thoughts as we're getting closer here. I think the biggest problem this movie, though, of everything else, is that it is so boring to watch at points. Because, honestly, there's no plot. And therefore, because there's no plot and there's no obvious end goal in sight, there's lots of sequences where nothing's happening. And you're just watching people talk and interact and do stuff, but there's no forward momentum. And honestly, the part that they were trying to sell as the big, here's where the crazy stuff happens moment, was one of the parts where I totally checked out of the film. And you know exactly the part where it is, where they hint at in the trailer with him walking around in a diaper and a bathrobe with a machine gun. That was laughably ridiculous, in my opinion.
Oh, it is absolutely stupid.
I will say, in those, and I think part of this is the reaction to, I've mentioned in other reviews, my mom is dying of Alzheimer's. So seeing those scenes where it's just the family trying to deal, those scenes were effective for me because there is a personal connection to these scenes. I have watched my mom degenerate. So it's like, I know you had trouble, you know, you've said like having him, you need a starting point to a finishing point. I think in my mind it's like, I already have a starting point and I already know the ending point because I've seen this in my mom. So it's like, I didn't need a starting point because I already know what this is. So I think me, it was a little bit more effective. Like there was one of my favorite scene in the movie is when Capone is there and he's drawing pictures and his son comes in and he sees a picture and he's like, who's that? It's Tony. And it's like, who's Tony? Well, Tony's my son. It's like, well, I'm your son. No, it's Tony, my son. And while this is a reference to another person, Junior does not know that. So in his mind, he has now disappeared from his father's memory. And just this subtle acknowledgement, and also I mean, it's very, very small, but you can tell his world has just come out from under him. And I have had that moment with my mom, and I know exactly that feeling. So it's like, I think you may need to have a personal connection to this sort of thing in order to for those scenes to be a bit more palpable. But if you need to have that experience before watching a movie, the movie didn't do its job.
Well, see, and that part I actually did like, and that I wish the movie did more of that. It wasn't the problem with the Alzheimer there. It was the problem with the crazy dream sequence that other part was framed in, where it was just so, like, this is where we got arty and expressive and everything else.
Yeah, every time it tries to be arty and expressive, it just... It starts somewhere, and then it just fumbles.
Yeah, I really felt those parts were the most distracting. And it's a shame, because, they're not badly composed on a cinematography level. They just feel like they're just so haphazard in some of the ways they're executed. And even, again, the editing, where sometimes when people talk, it'll cut between, like, a foot movement of, like, camera rotation up and down. And it was, like, really distracting, because it felt like Josh Trank felt obligated to show every little bit of footage that he shot in a certain scene. Because it was almost a Bohemian Rhapsody today level. Where it was like, wait, okay, I got to see this person's face and this person's face and this person's face and this person's face in that conversation. But yeah, that's just me. I think I'll just start to wind down just saying, you know, this isn't the worst movie I've seen this year. But, I mean, that's damning faint praise. It's not a bad movie, and it's not even the worst thing that Josh Trank has made, which he's only made 3 movies. But for trying to be poised as a comeback vehicle, I don't think this is really working just yet. It's almost there. It needed somebody else to come in. Where, like, you know, the reason why Chronicle works so much, for whatever we think about both those people nowadays, is that Max Landis wrote the script, and that script was strong enough that Josh Trank could make something work out of it. And I think he needs somebody else to come in and assist in the writing part so they can have a little bit of a filter between both their ideas. So... yeah, it wasn't awful, but at the same time, I'm struggling to think of good parts that I would say, yeah, that was worth watching the movie for. So I'm going to give this 4 out of 10 shotgunned alligators.
See, I would. I mean, I do agree with mainly your rating. Let's just say it. 4 out of 10 carrots in the mouth and weird drooling. But
what's up, Doc?
I would call this a bad movie, and I don't know. I just, on paper, it's so much more interesting than what you see on screen, and I think that's its biggest failing, outside of the directing and the editing, just on the whole being nothing special. I think you are absolutely right. I think Josh Trank definitely needs to find somebody who he can collaborate with, somebody to tell him no on certain things, somebody to be like, hey, that's a great idea, maybe let's develop it more. This feels like a sophomore film for sure, and I'm interested to see what he does in the future, but if this and Fantastic Four, and I know it's not fully his movie because of all the studio interference, is reflective of his career, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, because it's such a shame, because Chronicle was so tight and well-directed otherwise, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think Chronicle uses a lot of cool tricks, but the true focus that kept me going along were the characters and the story, which weren't his responsibility.
Yeah. Also, I found the music by, what's the name of the composer here? It's like
LP.
LP.
I was actually going to mention, I actually liked the music quite a bit.
It was all right. It felt like when Junkie XL did the score for Black Mass. It's like, you know, if this was in a different movie, it'd be the perfect score. And in here, it works at points, but it feels like it's not the same tone as what the visuals are communicating sometimes.
That's fair. Yeah, At times I just sort of was like, oh, this is a cool shot and this is a cool song. Maybe it doesn't fit in for this movie, but I'm just going to imagine it in a better movie. So yeah, no, I agree with you 100%.
This movie gets better if I use my imagination on it.
I mean, that's been a current trend with this review. It's just like, hey, this is very interesting. The movie wasn't interesting, but the idea...
You turned into Tom Hardy imagining a new movie around the movie you're watching. But Mindy.
Well, like I said, I think that this movie has a lot, as you said, has a lot of good ideas in it, but there were too many. There were too many, and so they didn't get the attention that they needed in order to develop. So there needed to be a singular focus, and there were about 3 or 4 focuses. And in turn, none of them got the attention and care that they needed in order to be engaging. As you said, there are a lot of interesting ideas in it, but hardly any time was put into those ideas because you had to slim it down into a singular movie. So if that had happened, it would have been a lot more interesting. I will say, I did think that Tom Hardy did a good job at being the, not degenerate, but disintegrated person. But as I said, it was gross. And there needed to be a bit of a break from the grossness in order for you to be engaged in this character. Because he was all for it. And it's like, I could totally see somebody succumbing to syphilis being like this. But there needed to be some breaks because it's too much. So I'm going to keep the combo going and give it a 4 little boys with balloons out of 10.
We only got one more reviewer. We'd have 4 fours.
And we did actually have someone else who watched this movie, and I think they give exactly the same rating. So there you go.
Yeah. Hashtag release the Trank cut.
This is the Trank cut. What are you talking about?
I'm saying there's a version that he's keeping from us.
The true version that would have been a lot better than what we got. You know, you'll just never see it though.
Hey man, directorial vision. I mean, they're volatile creatures, man.